Here are seven words you never thought you'd hear. This is Studio 360. I'm Alec Baldwin. Kurt Anderson is, well, who cares where he is? I brought some guests of my own, like my new favorite writer, Mary Carr. We'll say happy birthday to composer Frédéric Chopin. You look great for 200, baby. I'm also very excited to talk with my first guest, Laura Linney. She's been in some of the most acclaimed indie movies of the past decade, like You Can Count on Me with Mark Ruffalo. Linney is also a seasoned stage actor. This weekend, she's wrapping up her performance on Broadway in Time Stand Still by Donald Margulies. In the show, she plays a war photographer who's been injured in Iraq and struggles to readjust to life back home. Here's Linney in a scene with Alicia Silverstone.
War is just my parents' house all over again, only on a different scale.
It must be so intense. I mean, how can you concentrate with all that going on?
So automatic, I don't even think about it. When I look through that little rectangle, time stops. It just, everything around me, all the noise around me, everything cuts out. All I see is the picture.
It's a terrific performance. Laura Linney, welcome to Studio 360.
Hello, Alec Baldwin, radio host.
Yes, 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 yes. Now, in the play you're doing currently on Broadway, how would you describe the character you're playing now?
She's interesting. I'm still sort of figuring her out. She's a what's called a conflict photographer. She goes to places where countries are in upheaval, famines, wars, genocides. She would be in Haiti right now if she was real.
So like the famous Vietnam execution.
That's right. That's right. All of those things. And it is her vocation. It's what drives her. It's what feeds her, is capturing these images of injustice, of pain, of suffering, of struggle, of victory, and then to let other people know about it.
And she's tough.
She's very tough. Yeah, she's very tough.
And you absolutely. And you wanted it to be that way.
Well, I think it's what the script told me.
It did.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're just responses that are... Yeah. She doesn't sugarcoat
it. Unsparing.
She's very unsparing, and I think her thing is all about get to the truth of the matter. She's brutally truthful.
You seem very comfortable on stage. Are you as comfortable on stage as you seem to be?
I love it. Yeah. I do.
It's like an evening to you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, you're in a room, and these are your friends, and they all came to see you.
And I love people talk a lot about that it gets very monotonous doing a show over and over and over and over and over again, and I actually really enjoy it. Because it's always a little slightly different. You can hear the music of the piece in a different way. You'll respond to things differently. A moment will open up. And with theater, unlike film, you have time. And time works its own magic, and you can't rush it. There are certain connections that are made, actor to actor, actor to script. So as the weeks go by, layer upon
you have a
layer
relationship with
layer.
A chair you didn't have.
You're exactly right.
In week
six. That sounds silly, but
well,
it's
I've had
true.
That
happen. Yeah.
Now, this is the second play you did of Margulies.
Yes.
And Sight Unseen was directed by who?
Well, I was in it twice, actually. The original production, which was right after I got out of school at Juilliard, and then I did the other part 12 years later when they did the Broadway revival. And it was what part of the reason I went into the theater for was hoping that I would be able to age in the theater, that I'd be able to grow from ingenue to character actress, leading lady. And this production of Time Stand Still is also directed by Dan Sullivan. So it's a reunion of sort for Donald, myself, and Dan.
And what was that experience like working with him again for the second time?
Even better.
Right. Everybody loves Dan.
Even better. More than any director I've ever worked with, I trust him completely.
Do you find in theater and film, do you defer to directors equally the same way? Or is this a special place that Sullivan occupies?
Most film directors don't know anything about acting.
Right.
They don't.
I'm glad you said that.
Yes.
I'm glad you opened that can of worms first.
It's not true.
Laura Linney.
It's not true for all of them. But most of them have many other things to think about. And they don't understand actors. They haven't really spent time with actors. They're afraid of what an actor's going to do
to a movie. It's an uncontrollable element.
Yeah, there's always a period of time, I find, not with all directors, of course, but with certain directors, particularly new ones, that it takes a while for them to realize, oh, she really is trying to make the movie better. I'm not trying to do anything other than, illuminate a story.
Figure this out.
Figure it out, and let's figure it out together. And there's certain things about acting that know to be true, and that if you sort of veer from that, you're going to get yourself in trouble.
Many directors today, to me, they're like tanker captains.
You know?
Movies are like these giant, you know, oil tankers that they have to bring into the harbor with as, you know, as efficiently and with as little damage.
Yeah.
And the acting thing is the thing that falls to the wayside first for them because they don't understand it.
Yeah. You have to trust acting. I mean, we put everything in place, but then it has a life of its own. And you have to trust that if the decisions made up to that point are the right ones, that the right result will come. But you can't skip steps along the way. So at least I can't.
You've worked with some great film directors.
I have.
Some really great film directors. And how do you find, is the relationship the same? Is acting and your relationship with directors is the same? Or is there another element when you're involved with a camera?
It's different.
It is different.
It is different. You know it's different.
It is different. Yeah.
It is different. And it's not better or worse. It's just different. And I'm so grateful that somehow I had the insight when I moved from theater to film, not to try and apply the rules of theater onto film, and vice versa. And certain directors will, it takes me a while to sort of figure out, like, what does this director need from me? Hmm. Where's their strength? Where's their weakness? Where can I maybe help them see that there's a moment or a dynamic that they don't quite see? With the less experienced directors, it's a lot about calming them down.
Which people don't understand because you'd assume that the director would be there to support you.
Yeah.
I mean, right now we live in that age of the fully realized writer-director.
Yes.
Where an independent film, they'll say to someone, you can direct your own script, but we're only going to pay you the one fee for the two jobs. Mm-hmm. So as a savings now in independent film, you have these hordes of writer-directors out there that have come along. And the thing that they're the most lacking in is the directing ability. And it's amazing how you wind up having to be more supportive of them.
Yes. And then sometimes someone will really surprise you, like Kenny Lonergan, who had never been on a set ever.
Kenny directed You and You Can Count on Me.
Yeah. I think maybe he had visited a set once, but I remember our first day I showed him how to read a call sheet.
Let's listen to a scene from that movie. You play a single mom raising a son, and Mark Ruffalo is your screw-up brother who's come back to town.
I don't think you know how to behave around an 8-year-old, and I don't know how to make you stop, so I don't think you should live here. I don't know what else to say.
I don't know how to behave around an 8-year-old.
That's right.
I think you don't know how to behave around an 8-year-old.
Are you out of your mind? Now, just listen to me. No, I may not be the greatest mother in the world, but I'm doing the best I know how. And he doesn't need you to rub his face in because you think it's good for him. He's going to find out the world is a horrible place and that people suck soon enough and without any help from you. Believe me.
That's a scene from You Can Count on Me with Laura Linney. Laura, you said that Kenny Lonergan surprised you. How so?
He understood his own material better than any other first-time director I've ever worked with.
What was that experience like making that film?
It was hard. It was really
Why?
Hard because it was made for 2 cents. We did it in 21, 22 days. Literally, we were housed in a chicken coop.
Right.
You know? I mean,
I stayed there before, the chicken coop.
The chicken coop. You know, it was just a rough schedule. It was tense. But the material was so good.
You knew you were on to something when you were making the film.
Well, and the minute I met Mark Ruffalo, my heart melted and I was like, oh, this is going to be great. Mm. You know, so it was a rough shoot, but it was, we were all in it. We were all invested.
Would you say that because you have worked so much in so many mediums, are most of your friends people who are in the business? Are your closest friends people in the business? Or do you have a life that's completely outside of the business?
Well, now I have a life that's completely outside of the business. I met my husband in Telluride, Colorado. He has a wonderful community of friends there. And they've graciously welcomed me into their fold. And I'll never forget there was one time he had invited me over to meet some of his friends. And everybody sat down for dinner. And there were 4 kids running around. And there was food coming on the table. And I felt like such a alien because I realized, like, I don't think I had sat down to dinner in a house with people
at 6 o'clock
with a family at 6 o'clock, and I was sort of in this weird. I felt like I was on another planet, and it was wonderful.
A similar thing happens to me. I'll be walking down the street. And it'll be 8 o'clock in New York. And whenever it's 8 o'clock in New York, I stop for just a moment, pause, and I go, there are about 250 yeah. curtains that are going
up
right now.
There are a lot of people who are backstage.
There's a lot of curtains going up right now. Yeah. There's a lot of playbills that are people are stopping, rustling right now, and it's the game on at 8
That's
o'clock
right.
in New York.
I always wish, I would love to hear all of the stage managers, however many there are on Broadway, probably 50 at least or something like that.
More. 80.
More than that. I would love to hear a chorus say at the same time, half hour, ladies and gentlemen, it is your half hour call, half hour.
I'd love to do a documentary film where you go backstage at so many of these venues, because I'm also talking about the ballet and the symphony and the opera.
It's amazing.
And every kind of programming you can think of, off and on Broadway, off Broadway.
My favorite time of the day is going to the theater. I love leaving my house. I love getting my cup of coffee or my cup of tea. I love getting into the subway. I love going to the theater. I love walking in the stage door. I like saying hello to the guy, going to my dressing room, sitting down, looking at my stuff.
Emptying yourself out.
It's wonderful. It's a wonderful period of time.
My guest is actor Laura Linney. We'll talk more in a moment. I'm Alec Baldwin in Studio 360. Kurt Anderson is out to sea this week. He aims to break a world record by circumnavigating the globe in a kayak. I'm talking with Laura Linney, one of the finest actors working in Hollywood today.
Well, for me, there is no difference between a private life and a public life. My life is my life. It is the Truman Show. The Truman Show is a lifestyle. It's a noble life. It is a truly blessed life.
Yeah, tell me something I don't know.
Truman Show is a film where what's on display is something I read about you online.
Reading things online.
I'm reading things. No,
Alec
but
Baldwin.
But I mean, me of all people. No, let me. I've got to recover now. There's this quote I read about you where it says, Laura Linney, whose wholesome beauty is deceiving. When you look at Truman Show, when you do that turn, when we find out about you in the film, do you find that that's true of you? That you've been asked to play these characters who are really, really very, there's two sides to them?
Yes. And I think it's because I always really believe that no one is one thing. Sort of the palette of personality, of behavior, of desire, of objective can be so yin and yang.
Right.
You know, it can be so different. So I don't know if it's because I find it interesting that then I've been cast that way a lot. But most people look at me and they think I'm from Iowa, you know, and I'm from New York City.
Do you ever wonder how people view you or how they see you from the roles you play? And is there a side to you that they see that you like? And what's a side of you you wish they saw that they maybe that you haven't been able to express in the work you've
done? I think
the
thing that's always a little, my heart always sinks, people come up to me and they say this to me all the time, you're so much better looking in person. And I don't know what to say to that.
Right.
I don't know what to say. Yeah. I'm like, thank you.
People do say some strange things.
They say odd things. And I'm really puzzled by people wondering why I'm not more glamorous in certain parts. And I'm thinking, but it's not the part.
Right.
It wouldn't be telling the story. So I always get a little thrown off guard that way.
And people don't understand that, you know, you don't write the piece. Like I would do films where I would play someone who was very Machiavellian, sociopathic even.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say to people, well, that was the job. That was what was written.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're playing Hitler, you got to play Hitler.
You got to play Hitler.
But for you, I think you obviously come from a certain background. Your father was a famous playwright, and you went to Brown and you went to Juilliard.
Yes.
But here's
a misconception. This is good. What a lot of people don't know is I grew up in a one-bedroom apartment. My mother was a nurse at Memorial Sloan Kettering, and it was not easy.
Right.
You know, I did not come from privilege.
I think people have a misconception that you grew up that way.
Yes, I think a lot of people think I grew up with a lot of money. And I didn't.
And the how did the experience of going to Brown and going to Juilliard, how do you think that affected you and your acting? Did it help you?
Yes. Juilliard certainly helped me. And Brown did as well. I mean, at Brown, I learned how to think. You know, I learned what questions to ask myself.
What was your undergraduate degree in?
Theater arts, with emphasis in theater history.
And did you feel that you needed to go to graduate school?
Absolutely, I did. I knew I did. I had my father, as you mentioned, is a playwright, and I used to follow him around to the regional theaters and see his plays, and I would watch these ingenues who were so wonderful, like flowers. They were gorgeous, and they'd get to a certain age, and they'd fall apart.
Because?
They just couldn't, because they were only acting on instinct. And they would get to the more complicated roles and they couldn't.
And they hadn't learned to act.
They didn't know what to do. Right. And I thought, oh God, like, go get yourself trained. And because I wanted a long life in the theater, I really, you know, I want to play the nurse in Romeo and Juliet, hopefully, when I'm older.
You have three films that are in post-production now or about to be released. And one of them is Sympathy for Delicious. The other is The Details. And the other is called Morning, correct? Mm-hmm. You like to work.
I do.
You like to work.
I do.
What's the longest you've ever taken off from work?
Not long. Actually, I took a lot of last year off.
Why?
Which was...
Well, what happened last year that you decided...
It was timed and I realized I wasn't having a life, you know, and I love the work. I love it. And I could be one of those people who just works
lights
nonstop.
One off the other.
That's right. But it would be nice to attend a birthday party every once in a while, to show up for a wedding, to go to a family reunion.
When you stopped working, how did that feel?
Pretty good. I also got married, so it gave us some time to be together. And I got to watch the seasons change. You know, I got to really enjoy it. That's what I miss the most, I think, is celebrating each season. I love spring. I love fall. I love winter. And I got to actually engage in the world in a way that I, you know, have opted not to for a while.
Talk for a minute, if you would, about Big C.
Ooh, the Big C.
And talk about your mom.
And my mother.
Right.
The Big C is a Showtime series, which is about a woman who has terminal cancer. Hence the title of the series. I'm executive producing and starring in it. And it's a comedy about a woman who has cancer.
What was it that made you decide you wanted to pull into that harbor?
I wasn't looking to do a series, but it came to me during a time in my life where I'd lost some friends. And I was thinking about mortality constantly. And
is getting married a part of it as well?
I'm sure. And it was sort of just dealing with all the things that I had really been stewing over. And I thought, well, why not? This is a worthy thing to explore and in some ways an impossible task. And that always gets me a little interested.
And what about
your
mother?
I'm looking forward to it. My mother was a nurse at Sloan Kettering when I was growing up. And Sloan Kettering is one of the greatest, you know, cancer hospitals around. She raised me as a single parent. We lived in a one-bedroom apartment. She worked 12-hour shifts caring for terminally ill people. And I remembered all of that very, very well. And I remember the patients who she would become attached to, that she would love, and the families that she would get to know. And I'm so proud of her career as a nurse. I'm so proud of it. So it was, you know, cancer's, you know, looms around.
My dad died of cancer when he was 55.
Yeah. And life and what we have and what it says about time. And if you knew you only had a year, what would you do with the time? And is that a blessing to know that you only have a year, or is it a curse?
And how can you get better at acting like you only have a year?
That's right, yeah.
And take every day one day at a time.
There's a fantastic expression that Josie Abbott told me once. Do you remember her? She was a director in the theater.
Yes.
She's no longer with us. But there was a first day of rehearsal, and she goes, okay, we don't have a lot of time, so we have to work very slowly. And it's one of my favorite expressions. And whenever I get a little crazy or tweaked or start to twizzle out on a set or because of work or just crazy things about life, I always sort of, you know, use that. It's a bit of a mantra of mine.
Laura Linney,
all right,
thanks.
One second, though.
Oh, go ahead.
Good job, man. Well done.
Well,
it's
I was dying to talk to you.
For you.
Well, but I was dying to
this
talk to you because
amazing.
It's easier to talk to people who you sit and read everything and go, okay, we got a lot of stuff to talk about here.
Yeah.
This is going to be good. Anyway,
well,
Laura Linney, thank you so much for coming
in. I thoroughly enjoyed this. Great to see you.
You too. Pleasure. Laura Linney's series, The Big C, debuts on Showtime this summer. You can see a preview at Studio360.org.